Welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guest today is Lady Hubbard. We're going to be talking about her new collection of short stories, The Last Suspicious Holdout. And Lady Hubbard, welcome back to Diverse Voices Book Review.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So, Lady, before we got started, we were talking about getting a book out so soon after your previous book, I believe published in January of 2021. So yeah. This short story collection, was this already in the works prior to your January 2021 novel?
It was. It's something I've actually worked on for a while. So like the first story in it was actually published in 2009. So a lot of the stories were already written. The title story was not. So I had to write, it's a very long story that fits right in the middle, and that I had to work on. And then it was just editing and stuff. But yeah, it was pretty fast. It was a lot of work getting it together for publication still. Yeah.
Reading through all the stories, they are all so connected. And so there seems to be this central through line of Leon Moore, the community activist in Chicago, who was allegedly killed an officer or murdered an officer, mm-hmm. and is in jail in the community center that he started that's being run by his brother Henry. And Henry has a bar, Henry's bar, and Henry's bar is in several of the short stories. So when you started writing the short stories, was your thought the whole time that there many of these stories were going to be connected?
Yes. One thing is, though, they're not in Chicago. They're definitely, I don't name the place, but they're definitely not in Chicago.
I saw Southside. I got thrown off my Southside. I saw Southside. I said, oh, Southside. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a lot of Southsides.
Yeah, but you're right. Chicago's never mentioned. My gosh.
No, I know. I don't mention. It's just like the novel. I don't actually mention where it is because it's not really about the specifics of it. But it is definitely in the South. So it's not Chicago. It's the South Side of the South somewhere, right? Of a town in the South, but probably Florida or New Orleans and some combination of both. But in terms of that, yeah, there is a plot going on for me. There is a through line that goes on. If I was writing it as a novel, it'd be obviously a very different story, but there is a continuity in my mind that I kind of held on to while I was writing it. But I wanted to show, I really wanted to talk about sort of the communal experience of it. So it's focused, that's why it's written in that way. And yes, I did always sort of have that intention. I'm glad it worked out finally as a book, because it would not necessarily, that was not a necessary thing that, this is gonna work out great. But yeah, it's something I had in mind for a very long time, like to talk about those specific years. And originally it was the 20 years prior leading up to Obama's election, and that each story would take place in a different year and it would be told from just different perspectives. And overall you would see kind of a transformation that is going on within the community as a whole.
Well, I tell you, I also got thrown off because you had these Senator Barack Obama billboards.
I know.
In one of those stories. But let me go to the first story, Flip Lady, because I will confess, when I read Flip Lady, the very first story, it made me think of New Orleans.
Yeah,
because I can recall growing up where we would go to somebody's house to buy these cups of basically Kool-Aid that they poured in a cup and stuck in the freezer.
That's right.
And we bought them for 10 cents or mm-hmm. or 25 cents. And I said, that is so much New Orleans.
That's really funny. Well, see, there are a lot of South Sides, because I did that too, and I wasn't doing that. I was doing that. That's what I'm saying. I think that I've lived in New Orleans for so long that even when I'm not writing about New Orleans, I am, because a lot of my ideas and images are being affected by where I am. But we did that in Florida. I have very clearly strong memories of going to the Flip Lady's house in Florida. So I think a lot of people you know, have some variation of that. Not just New Orleans.
Well, it's like a discussion I had a friend of mine from Mobile, Alabama. She always reminds me, you know, Mardi Gras started in Mobile first. And then I remind her that originally Louisiana included Alabama.
Yeah, well, see, I think New Orleans gets Mardi Gras. I wouldn't write a Mardi Gras story and place it anywhere else but New Orleans. So,
well, I can't wait to tell her. So what I do want to also talk a little bit about Tony, because in my mind, Raymond's friend, Raymond, the main character in Flip Lady, whose mother is the Flip Lady.
Yeah.
And they're in a sort of this grief. They're in this mourning because of the death of his older brother. And he has a close friend named Tony that, mm-hmm. you know, he grew up with. And it so much reminded me of that person you were close to when you met in elementary school. You were close in fifth grade and sixth grade, and you're coming around them now. You're 19 or 20. You've kind of gone different paths. That person you were close to when you were 10, 12, 13, 14, all of a sudden you recognize at some point, you know, we're really not going down the same path. And the thought that came to my mind, especially with at least one of the things that happened in this short story, was Tony, I thought of as the trickster.
That's very interesting. Yeah, because I mean, definitely that is in my mind part of their dynamic as well. But he has his good qualities. He does. Tony?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I think they're becoming different people, but they still care about each other. So I was trying to convey that as well. And I think.
But what Tony did now, because I'm close friends with people I went to fifth grade with too, actually. Uh-huh. Seventh grade, two in seventh grade, one high. But I will say that, let's just say Tony does something like, I can't believe you did that, dude.
Right. Right, because he wanted to test the theory.
That's why I call him the trickster.
Right. Well, no, but that's what I meant when I was saying, I think it's like a very complicated, like all the relationships for me in that story are very complicated. And they never really explicitly say what happened to the brother also. So it's,
right.
it's about their responses to that and how their relationships to it as well. And I think that, yeah, that's terrible. He is a trickster figure because it is kind of complicated the way he interacts with the girl, for example, because I actually think he's saying nice things to her. Like she's feeling really bad and he's telling her you're going to be all right. And he's also the only one Raymond never talks to her really. Raymond never really bothers to talk to her. So I mean, maybe it didn't turn out as well as it might have, but at least he asks her questions. He's like, you know, he's the only one that asks her ever. She says why her family moved back to that town, her mother and her. Yeah.
From Grenada. So, yeah, I mean, I really felt a lot of empathy for that little girl when you're sort of the butt of jokes,
and
you don't really fit in, but you're trying to fit in. And that was a little bit of a sad story, but you're absolutely right. But what's interesting is how, as a reader, you look at it, and even though, you know, these are complex characters, sometimes you just what resonates is, in this case with Tony, is, I can't believe he did that.
Right. No, it's terrible. It is terrible. It is. I'm not saying it's not terrible.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah. So that's part of the trickster thing, the complicated dynamic, because I do think she appreciates someone just talking to her, do you know, and telling her she'll be all right. And he could have been a lot ruder than that. And I think, you know, I don't know. It is interesting. They both could have been a lot ruder than they actually were. Like Raymond didn't have to try to fix her bike for her and stuff like that. So for me, that dynamic's really complicated. Do you know?
Well, the whole book to me is sort of a kaleidoscope, because you deal with some criminal justice issues, There is a short story where an auditor sent in from a major corporation that's funding the Moore Creative Center that's been funded a long time. And the auditor is originally from the same neighborhood that the center is in. And so she goes in with the corporate hat, with the narrowness, the right. blinders of corporate America. And I saw that as a message. It's all too often when they look at our community, they go in with these blinders, that people right. go in with these blinders, and how important it is to sort of self, you have to sort of check yourself, as we would say back in the old days, and sort of take a look at yourself and make sure that you have a broader look at what's going on there, the complicated nature of why people are or what's happened to them. And so Millicent, Millie is, yeah. you know, I was like, whoa, Millie's back. She's in another one of those short stories yeah. too. I'm like, wow, this is a great, and this was a great evolution. I won't reveal it, but this was also a great evolution of Millicent's character.
Thank you.
From the
Thank
previous you. Short story. So I really liked reading these stories, and you say, oh my God, she's not who she was.
Right.
Because there's a story a friend of mine likes to tell. We're in Washington, D.C., and a story when we were in D.C. in a conference, and this was probably 27 years ago. And he always remembers this story 27 years later. And I'm thinking, dude, that story, I've changed. That's not me anymore.
Right, right. It is possible to do that, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like Millie, so I wanted her to get it together.
Now, Mrs. Montgomery, you don't pull any punches with the upper class looking down on other people. Yeah, you hold the upper class, the privilege, accountable, and you sort of the emperor has no clothes mm-hmm. type of right. situation. So you do make it a point. So I see some of that, you know, having myself sort of been through all these different situations. I see sort of that recognizing that, you know, even those who have a lot have issues, have problems, have weaknesses, commit sins. I mean, this story is so much, it's so real. I mean, it is so real. It's fiction, which is, lady, I'm always trying to convince my friends who don't like to read fiction, really never read fiction, because they don't see what value comes from fiction. But I will tell you, Lady Hubbard, reading your stories to me is so much a truth telling, and the creativity allows you to tell a story that just doesn't resonate rationally, but resonates emotionally.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's what I try to do. And that, I think that is the value of fiction just in general, because I think sometimes you can get to, for me, it feels like I'm a writer. So from my perspective, it you can get to sort of deeper truth sometimes through stories, as opposed to rationally explaining this is what this person or these people are experiencing or whatever. I feel like there's truth and resonance in poetry in the same way. So it's more, for me, it's more visceral. So I prefer, that's why part of why I prefer writing fiction. It's a much more interesting way for me to personally, again, everybody relates to words differently, but for me, it's a much more meaningful way to explore sort of the ideas and things that interest me that go on in the world, is to try and think about them in terms of like real experiences and how they reverberate to impact sort of the, again, complex human beings and complex interactions. So I don't know, you're just staring at me. I can tell you're really boring.
I'm thinking, no, I'm listening and thinking about it, because honestly, I'm looking, I got my notes on half the screen, right?
Oh, okay.
And let me tell you what story is up, bitch, and etymology of family value. So I'm thinking that I probably couldn't even say that title necessarily if we're still doing radio.
Yeah, no, I but know. I was worried about that title for a while. But I was like, it is an etymology. It's just the way the term is moving from woman to woman to woman. and they're all using it. And it is sort of tracing how the meanings change.
I've never seen it used so creatively. Also, there's a lesson learned about, you never know when you think you're having a private conversation when maybe it's not a private conversation. Somebody might be actually listening to that conversation. But you start off mostly referring to the wife of the city council member who was the lawyer representing Leon Moore.
Yes.
When he was in trouble and took his representation of Leon Moore to get elected to city council. But you start off mostly referring to her as Mrs. Montgomery over and over again. Talk about the decision to have her start off the references to her constantly as Mrs. Montgomery. And if you may sort of tiptoe around the edges of the relationship between Mrs. Montgomery, Millicent, and the judge's wife.
Oh, gosh. I don't know how to tiptoe around. That's hard to tiptoe.
You can just say this. This is a story you want to read because it is absolutely fascinating.
Say that then. I can say it, but I don't know how to tiptoe around that.
You can. So. Well,
Montgomery is the man is the axis. All of these women are they have a relationship to him, right? So and he is related to the term too, the use of the term, all the usages of the term bitch ultimately come back to him, including his daughter, people calling his daughter that. So that's part of what's going on there. Yeah. Do you want me to, I don't mind.
No. We'll save this as a surprise. Cause you know, I'm about to, my 16 year old is, I'm going to mandate to earn her extra allowance next month. She reads this short story collection.
Nice. I mean, from my perspective, that's nice. I don't know how it is from hers, but that's nice. That's great.
No, this book, once again, I just love it. I mean, I just love your writing. Because I think, like, as a African-American male, you're looking for those writers. You read all these different stories with all these different settings, dealing with all these different cultures, and you enjoy learning about all these different cultures and these different things. But also, especially as they get older, you want more home, more nostalgia, more things that remind you of the people you grew up with, the situations you're familiar with. And you're dealing with so many things throughout all these short stories that I can personally relate to. We call them huckabucks, going to the lady's house to buy the huckabucks, the trickster friend. I had one of those. I had the trickster friend that I met in fifth grade, the trickster friend. I've been involved with community organizations. Matter of fact, there's a community organization called Shape Community Center in Houston that was founded, gosh, it might be 50 years ago. And it's still run by the guy that founded it. So they're in Houston and having seen that organization, having been around that community center, the importance of the community centers. I worked in corporate America too. So I'm just going to compliment you because it just makes me nostalgic and it's just such a good feeling. It's like this home feeling reading this collection of short stories. So that's my praise for, you know, The Last Suspicious Holdout.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. That means a lot to me. You know, that really does. Well, I'm glad it worked out. writing these stories for a long time.
You keep writing these stories for me. I'm going to start claiming Lady Hubbard stories are written for Hopeton Hay.
Wow. Yeah. No, that's great.
For my generation, my peer group. But we have a little science fiction in here, too, which I really did enjoy.
Oh, good.
So talk, was that purposeful or was that sort of as you came along and you were writing that particular short story that it sort of hit you?
You know, it was purposeful. Sometimes I think, and I don't know if this is what it gets the most directly expressed from that story, but in terms of like Black people being realistic or even the idea of realism, as a genre, as opposed to like speculative fiction, and how there are so many experiences. Like that's what when the woman is correcting her, because that's the last suspicious holdout. She calls it a cult, or she's asking them. The way she's correcting them is saying, look at all these really bizarre ideas that sort of undergird your reality. And why is this sort of more strange than any of the ideas that you were brought up with? Not any of them, but some of them. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And it also is a reference to the idea of race as sort of being in and of itself a kind of science fiction. So that's part of where the impulse to go there with that story came from. Do you know what I mean?
Like, no, I know exactly what you mean. And the way she corrected her on her definition of what's a cult.
Right.
And I like the Rev there, sort of this the pearls of wisdom that the Rev is giving in The Last Suspicious Holdout. And I believe it's The Last Suspicious Holdout, the longest of the short stories in your collection. It sort of brings it all together, especially addressing all the social problems faced in the community that center is trying to address, and basically trying to help Claudette open up her eyes to this.
Right. Well, no, thank you. Cause that was the last story I wrote for the collection, and I could feel that I felt like it really just needed to be there. Do you know what I mean? Like to pull things together. So that's what that story was for me. Yeah. So thank you. Cause you're reiterating that's that's what I was going for. That one. So.
Houston and the blinking what? And correct me if I'm wrong here. So with that story, the young girl whose mother just kind of moves all over the place, you know, there's a song by The Temptations called Papa Was a Rolling Stone. And so maybe the sort of mama was sort of a Rolling Stone just going.
Oh, you're thinking of There He Go. That story.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And her just imagining who her grandfather was just from a picture and just filling them with all these qualities.
Right.
And I won't reveal the ending, but it was a little bit sad.
Well, it is sad. Yeah, it's also, there's something heroic about that. I think someone thinking of someone that really needs something to hold on to, and she creates it herself, right? To be able to do that from a picture. But again, it's complicated because I don't think, I was talking about how people come up with strategies to cope with stressful, this is what I was thinking about.
Right, stressful situations.
And then at a certain point, hopefully, if this is true, you realize it. That sometimes those strategies are not really serving you. They're not like there's something, they represent something you needed, right? But
at the time,
and that you know, hopefully by the end of the story, that was what that last minute, like maybe she's like, I, you know, there is something else that I might have held on to. Do you know what I mean? Something that might have felt a little realer to me and offered more of a sort of basis of emotional support. Because this is about, there's all kinds of stuff going on, but feeling alone. Do you know what I mean?
And oh, no, I know exactly what you're talking about there.
Yeah. And not wanting to feel like you are alone in the world, and that there is sort of like a sense of heritage and history and something that, you know, informs your identity, that makes you feel strong. And but is it actually empowering you ultimately? Do you know what I mean?
No, I know what you mean, because your book reminds me a little bit of The 12 Tribes of Hattie. I don't know if you read that book. And so when I read that book many years ago, one of the things that resonated for me with that book is parents not understanding or recognizing how their actions could have a long-term impact on their children.
Right.
And how, as a parent, and I was really looking at from a parent, you talk about the deeper truths and thinking long and hard about, you never know what you may say or do in front of your kids that will have a long-term impact on them.
Right.
So you have to really think long and hard about that. But also, you know, when I've talked to, you know, I have a stepson who played football and had these conversations of what he had to hold on to stay focused. Because sometimes you just don't know what your kids may need.
Right. Right.
For them to sort of survive. And sometimes, you know, you're fortunate enough where you can have that conversation with them and it's not a surprise. And then the shocking stories always seem to be those kids who, God forbid, commit suicide.
Right.
Who on the surface, they're captain of this and they're on this team and that team, they're committing suicide. You're thinking, golly, they really didn't have something to hold on to.
Right. Right. And it, you know, and it, again, it's like, it's hard to find something. So people create things often to hold on to. I don't know if anybody else in the story realized that that's what was going on with her. Exactly. Do you know what I mean? Like,
no, they didn't. And in my mind, they didn't realize because I have once my wife's father's wife at the time said something to the effect that, you know, in the 60s, we were so focused on ourselves that we didn't pay attention to our kids.
Right. That's interesting. Yes. Well, I think throughout that story, like some of those stories were very intentionally paying focused on people that were kind of on the margins of the main event. And I actually think everyone is going through that are so focused on her mother and what a mess her mother is that they're not really paying attention to what is going on with the children. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And there's like another story going on that involves her mother. And that's what most of the adults are that's who they're interacting with. These two kids are just kind of not just but
the background.
Yes. And one of them is very irritating to me. The girl is very irritating.
She lies a little. Yeah. You know, you call her, you know, a little bit of a liar there.
Yeah, no one's really
paying attention to her.
Right, to what's going on. Yes.
Because sometimes
that will help. Yes.
Yeah, because you know, sometimes speaking from experience, lying is a call for attention from the kids. It is a real call for attention from adults.
Right. I agree. So that was one of the story I really wanted to talk about. People that are on the sidelines of maybe the main event, like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
They're not really considered the most important figure in the scenario, and just to sort of twist it and make it their story. What does this feel like from that perspective? Do you know?
And you close out with the story of Polly Sparks, who was forgotten, promises made to him, not kept, betrayals. And then, of course, I guess I won't say anything. You say what I could say about Polly. Let's just say that it ties to the Henry's Bar story.
Yes. Because some of the characters appear in more than, he's the character that actually appears in more than one story. Yeah, so he's in the early story with Henry and then at the end as well. So
I'm learning who Henry really is throughout. You have to read the collection to learn who Henry is. You have to read the host, all the short stories.
Right. There you go. Yeah, encourage people to don't skim. Read the whole thing.
Read all the short stories.
You have to read all of them.
You can't just skip one or two.
Yeah.
I was thinking about doing that, but your stories got too good to skip.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. You know, it's funny because I have a lot of empathy for pretty much all of the characters in there. I don't know. So I think Henry is very frightened. Do you know what I mean? On a certain level, there's a certain amount of bravado that's keeping his personality. That's my perspective.
No, because I'm thinking, is he carrying on the legacy as Leon would want it. I'm like, he hasn't visited him in what, 6 months?
No. He's very, I think he's, what I mean by that is I think he's not the way,
I'm the worst because you know what we do? What you reveal is as readers, we're sort of, I think we actually are sort of oriented toward trying to see things in black and white.
Right.
Even though we know in real life, it's gray. It's all this, but we tend to want to just say good character, bad character.
Right.
And you're trying to help me to see Henry in a more broader sense.
Well, you know, I said this before, that the villains don't see themselves often as villains. Right. Like they think they have a perfectly good reason for whatever they're doing. Often.
Absolutely.
Some people are just crazy and just, you know, but a lot of people think they're justified in their anger or the harm they cause. And so like to write about a character that is doing harm, you have to actually, not always, but, you know, often you have to sort of try to inhabit that mind. What is going on with this person? How does this feel to them? So that's what I mean when I say empathetic. Because I wrote them, so I have to.
I agree.
See what is going on from his perspective. You know, like what is actually, you know, it doesn't always ultimately matter. Like it's not an excuse for what people do, but I think that is a part of the process of writing a lot of the time. Do you know? It kind of forces you to sort of think about things from different angles. Do you know?
Right. There's always, it's like a friend of mine told me years ago, when you look at a situation, you can't judge a situation on the surface. You have to see what's below the tip of the iceberg.
That's right. And it doesn't mean that people are not wrong. A lot. I mean, I'm not saying that things that they do are excusable. Like to try and figure out what is going on in this person's mind is not the same as excusing what comes out. Do you know?
Right. And so I will make sure not to edit it out to make it sound like you love villains.
No, that's not what I meant at all. No. That's pretty funny.
Wow. Well, look, this is, as you know, I'm a fan.
Thank you.
That's about all. I'm a huge fan.
Thank you so much.
And I'm going to be asking, you know, my wife, she needs to read this book. Well, I can't tell my wife what that is. I may edit this out of the podcast. I may have to take this part out of the podcast.
That's funny.
But my daughter, who periodically 16, there are mandates for certain reading.
That's hilarious. No, that's great. There should be. Now I'm not just thinking about my own work too. That's awesome. That's great. Yeah, make them read. They gotta read.
Oh yeah. Well, make them read because, you know, when you have a daughter, you grow up in the suburbs, you know, they don't get to see, you know, when I grew up in New Orleans, we're in the Black community all around us. It's your family's all around. And then you move away, you're in the suburbs and they don't get that same feeling. She doesn't get that. So I want her to some degree to have that experience through reading those books, even if she doesn't think she should read those books.
Right. That's nice. Now I understand that. That's Claudette.
I don't want her to become Claudette.
Claudette
is, she's evolving. She's evolved. I have a degree in accounting, so I can make fun of Claudette.
Okay. Yes, you know, they're all good people.
Accountants are good people.
So, but anyway, I'm very glad that you know, you appreciated what I was trying to do with the book. So,
well, it's always great. It's always great interviewing you. I have such a wonderful time interviewing you.
Thank you.
I love the way you call me out and correct me.
Wow.
Rightfully so. No, this is a learning process for me. So I really do enjoy these discussions.
Thank you. I do too.
Lady Hubbard, author of The Last Suspicious Holdout. What's your website?
LadyHubbard.com.
And I always think, am I pronouncing her name right?
I know everybody. I get a lot of Lottie. I get Lottie a lot. It's Lady. So
thank you so much for being a guest on Diverse Voices Book Review.
Of course. Of course. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay, host and producer. The theme music is provided by Wright Productions. You can follow the show on social media. Under Facebook and Instagram, it's Diverse Voices Book Review, or Twitter under @DiverseBooksHay.